Hello and welcome to a brand new Fast Talkers podcast with me, Jenny Gow. Hope you enjoy this one. It's an Extreme E special. Hello and welcome to a brand new Fast Talkers as we talk all things electric and the brand new series that is Extreme E. And I have, well, you can see a great panel lined up to chat. Let's start off, we'll go to David Garrido from Sky, because David, you have been, I suppose, deeply rooted in all things Extreme E for at least the last couple of months. You know all there is to know about it.
Oh, my goodness. What a statement. What a billing. I'm not sure about that. I'm very passionate about this as a new sport, as a new venture, an adventure. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this affects what other sports do in the future as well, actually, how they set themselves up from the word go. Is there a message that is just as important as the sporting spectacle, which is basically what Extreme E are doing? And I've just loved the idea, got stuck into it. Sky have got the rights. We're gonna see how things pan out over the next, what is it, eight, nine months or so.
Next up, we will go to freelance journalist Hazel Southwell, who covers all things EV, including Extreme E. Hazel, how excited are you able to get about the new championship Extreme E?
I'm extremely excited.
Very good.
I think it's something that is genuinely thrilling about Extreme E. Like, when you go beyond the technology, when you go beyond like the format and everything to do with it, no one has any idea what is about to happen at the first event. No one. Like, you can speak to everyone in the teams and it's like, well, we've sort of tried to plan for everything that we can think of that possibly could happen. But like, the outcome, we don't know who's going to come out on top. We don't know what's going to be the trick to succeeding at Extreme E, because nobody's tried it before. So like, full motorsport, which a lot of it is so precision engineered, of course, as it should be, it's genuinely thrilling going into something where it's like, well, pretty much anything could happen.
Yes, and that's why we like it. And that's why we're going to speak to next the team principal for Andretti United Extreme E team, Roger Griffith. Roger, you are obviously on site. Tell us where you are and how it's been so far. I tell you what, while we wait for Roger's connection to maybe come back, that might be all we get from him, a smile. Let's go to Matt. Matt Hugh, journalist for Autosport, and you are also out in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to be here. I'm not quite in the same place as Roger. I'm in a hotel room. Although I think Roger's doing an impressive job of holding the camera still. I was on the boat for a few hours today and I've sat down. It feels like I've had a couple of shandies because I'm just listing from side to side. Now I'm back on the ground. So I can't imagine what it's like to be on there 24/7, but I'm enormously privileged and excited to be here.
Right, we're going to get Roger to just twist his phone round and hopefully, because at the moment, Roger, you're a bit like this. There we go. That is much better. Uh-oh. Hey, there we go. We got there. What is life like on the ship?
It's actually surprisingly comfortable for us. I mean, the food has been outstanding. I think we're starting to get a bit used to the motion of the boat. I think one of the first surprises that we had was when we showed up on the boat and they said, oh, you're sharing with so-and-so. And I was trying to remember the last time I actually shared a room with someone other than my wife. So that's been a little bit of a reacquaintance of perhaps university life back in the UK many years ago. But
who
no, it's really good. I mean, the refit,
with
Johan from QEV, so one of my competitors. But fortunately, I know him reasonably well from our Formula E adventures. But the refit they've done on the boat is unbelievable. You never know it's an old Royal Mail ship. It's pretty well appointed. They've got some great chefs. They've got some great staff on here that have been taking care of us. And it's been really good to have drivers and team principals and all of the legacy team aboard the boat. So it's been a great kickoff to a new championship, and we're super excited. Tomorrow morning, it's an early start for us, 6 a.m. We transfer to the mainland and then we head over to Alua for the fun of the race event. So, the real racing starts tomorrow, I would guess.
How much preparation work have you been able to do, Roger? Because obviously, as you say, this isn't a normal sport event. This is in the middle of nowhere. You haven't had your hands on the cars because they go on the ship and then they get, you know, taken to the venue. So it's very strange.
For a group of people that's used to having, you know, a racetrack that you're very familiar with and lots of opportunity to run simulations and run in driver in the loop simulators, this is raw motorsport. You know, we're going to be showing up. We don't really know what the track looks like. I'm not sure the Extreme E guys, they're still working out a few kinks perhaps over there as well. But no, I mean, I think in terms of preparation of the car is ready to go. There's been a number of updates to the car since we last ran in Aragon back prior to Christmas. We've, as you say, the car's been on the boat. So whilst we've known what the updates are, we haven't actually been able to physically do them until we arrived in Saudi Arabia. So the mechanics and engineers have already been in today. So they've been working on the cars. I think they're in pretty good shape. They were trying not to have too late a night tonight, knowing that we've got still a long way to go this week. So yeah, I think we're in as good a shape as we could, you know, hope to be at this stage. So, you know, we're just excited. You know, the two drivers talking to Katie and Timmy, you know, they just want to crack on with it now. I mean, they're ready to get into that sort of the final preparation prior to actually starting to run in competition.
Yeah, so your drivers for Andretti United, Katie Munnings, Timmy Hansen. Obviously, the whole selling point, or one of the many selling points of Extreme E, is that you do have a guy and a girl getting in a car. I hate that expression. I hate using girl as an expression because I think it's slightly derogatory, but it is a guy and a girl, yeah. And they get in the car and they drive like Billy-O. Is that something that you guys are acclimatizing to as well?
I mean, I personally have worked with quite a few female drivers in the past. And I've been very lucky to work with the likes of Danica Patrick and Simona Di Silvestra and Catherine Legg. So for me, it, at the end of the day, it's just another driver. It's a racing driver. It doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman. I think the bigger challenge has been two different types of driving style, two different physical people in terms of stature. Two different levels of experience. So that's really been, you know, the challenge from my perspective. And that really doesn't matter whether that was a man or a woman or two women or two men. You know, it's just two different drivers. So no, really the challenge has been trying to find a seating position, for example, that both are comfortable with. Trying to find, you know, Katie is, you know, she weighs what, 55 kilos and Timmy weighs 70. So, you know, we've got to find a seat solution that works for both of them. We've got to find visibility for both of them. We've got to find a car setup that works for both of them. So that these are the challenges that we have. It doesn't matter, you know, that they're sex. So for me, that's not important. But I think the concept that Alejandro has come up with of gender equality in motor racing is absolutely unique. You know, after he came up with it, you start to think, well, why didn't we think of this before? You know, so it's just one of those sort of light bulb moments.
There are certainly a lot of drivers to be excited about, I think. And nobody knows which experience is the right experience or the best experience. So I don't want to whip around everyone. We'll start with Matt. Which drivers do you think have got the best chance of doing amazingly?
Obviously, Roger is on the call, and I respect that. But I look at the Chip Ganassi Racing pairing. So it's Carly Dick and Sarah Price. Both names probably don't mean much this side of the Atlantic, but they both have off-road experience. I think that just counts for so much. You know, we've got a lot of circuit races going in. A lot of you know, people who applied their trade on two wheels. But I think both of them just having four-wheel relevant off-road experience and having spoken to Sarah in particular and sort of the stuff she's already anticipating. And we're in a really fortunate situation with Sarah Price and Jenson Button. And it's not often that a Formula One world champion is sat there going, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Or, oh, you know, and learning off a name that most people won't have heard of. So I look at those two and think, yeah, that's probably an early contender, just having that stability.
I think the one driver, and he's not the biggest name, although he's actually done absolutely everything. But the one driver who like kind of ticks every possible box you could is Stefan Sarrazin. who's driving for Veloce because he's done electric motorsport. He was really good in Formula E. He was the driver who, for quite a while, you know, you booted out someone who wasn't necessarily coping with the car very well, and you got Stefan in because he could just get in and get on with it in what's quite a weird series in Formula E. He's also got tons of rally experience. I don't know if there's anyone else on the grid that's got that range of experience, but also, and I'm so shocked that it took so long for her to be signed, but Michaela Arlen-Kotelensky, who's the female driver for Jensen Button's team, did all the test driving for the Odyssey. So like, you've got to surely rate that as like a pretty significant advantage in terms of like familiarity with the car and just knowing how, like, you know, she's tested the tires to the limit. So that's got to be worth something.
So I absolutely agree on Sarazan. I think that that's a very smart suggestion because of just the varied CV that he's got. I think it's a really interesting dynamic actually with him and Jamie Chadwick. Jamie, who's obviously been, you know, in circuit world and most recently single seater and achieved, you know, great success in W Series and got a British Formula 3 win as well. And having spoken to both of them, I think it's a really good partnership. And I think that's a kind of maybe an undersold factor here. I think there's an element of maybe not master protege, but difference in experience, certainly between Stefan and Jamie. But Jamie learns quickly and Jamie's incredibly composed and measured. And my God, is she determined. So I think that they're definitely a team to watch. Veloce seem very well set up. I know that Timmy was also involved in some of the testing involving, you know, the car right at the start as well. And I really love the sort of bond that he and Katie have got together. You know, they spent some time over in Sweden together. You know, Katie's been raving about the pizzas that Timmy makes because he's got his own pizza oven and blimmin' like loves pizza, is obsessed with pizza, drove three hours across Sweden to go to the best pizza restaurant. You know, his brother Ken wants to open a pizza restaurant. But what I think the communication is going to be key. And I think the ability to transmit information quickly and share that and be able to work together is going to be important. So I think that those two have got that already. You know, they've spent some time out on the ice and stuff. And actually remember that, you know, Katie through her family has got a wide range of experience too, through her dad, Chris, and, you know, the fact that they have their own company where they take people out, you know, almost like a corporate drives and they go on lots of different terrain. The other team that intrigues me though is Rosberg. And I think I like the setup of Molly Taylor. You know, there were lots of teams talking to Molly and Nico got her over the line. And Johan is, as Nico puts it, the goat of World Rallycross. You know, not that it's been around that long, but, you know, even so, he's done well in, you know, winning three of the last four. And yeah, I think that they're well set up as a team, and I like the way that looks early doors. But I mean, as you've rightly said, Hazel, it is so open. And I think it's down to driver talent and also adaptability. I think that's what's going to be maybe two of the telling factors, you know, straight out the gate, especially in Saudi Arabia.
Roger, are you picking up on any nerves now we're getting closer to the actual racing?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting your comments about Jensen. I mean, we had the Red Sea Turtle Legacy project this morning and, you know, there was a fair bit of drivers getting together and talking. And I think you're starting to see some of these very established names, super big profiles, now feeling the pressure of some of these underdogs that have maybe got a different skill set. And they're now starting to think, what on earth did I get myself into here? So I think that's going to be super interesting. I mean, we know every single driver here is quick. You know, that I think that's a given. They're coming from all different backgrounds. We've got all different types of terrain over the championship, you know. I mean, so you talk about Sarah and Kyle on the Ganassi side, you know, they've got a particular type of off-road speciality, which is sand, really, and the sort of short oval racing that Kyle's done. But then you look at the rallycross guys, you know, adapting to four-wheel drive cars, adapting to different surface changes. You know, the difference between the rally drivers and the rallycross drivers is, you know, the rally drivers are on their own. It's just against the clock. They've never gone into turn one side by side with other cars. So I think there's all sorts of different facets of driving. I mean, if you could take the perfect driver, you'd want a little bit of every single one of them, I think. But the one thing we're not talking about here is, I think what a lot of people forget about is the outside of the car. You know, we always talk about people inside the car and how they perform and all the rest of it. But there's, you know, the thing with motorsport now, it's global. And, you know, to be successful, you need sponsors and you need to have good communication and you need a good presence in front of camera. So you also have to find people that can translate, people that can, you know, put them in front of a sponsor and they can communicate well, they're good on camera, they can be funny, they can be, you know, they can tell a good story. So it's, you know, that's all part of it.
Roger, can I ask a question about your experience with the drivers? Because so much of motorsport is, you know, let's be honest, about being selfish, having the car exactly how you want it, focusing on whatever you can do to make yourself as fast as possible. So what's it like now they've got to be involved in these legacy programs, the environment, and sort of broaden their horizons a bit?
Extreme E is more than just going fast in five different locations around the world. Extreme E is about telling a story, sending a message, and using motorsport as that platform to communicate. You know, in other forms of motorsport, you know, sometimes drivers roll their eyes when they're asked to go and do a sponsor event. Here, that's not an acceptable situation. Here, I mean, we've spent 36 hours in the presence of some of the most renowned scientists on the planet talking about climate change and the impact of what's happening here in the Red Sea and, you know, the problems with coral and all the rest of it. And what we have to do is use motorsport to tell that story to the world, because, you know, the scientists have got a great message, but what they don't have is a mechanism to get it out there. And what these drivers have is a huge social media following. So they can use their platforms to communicate not only the success they're hopefully having on the racetrack, but also the education that they're getting as part of this program. So this program is more than just a championship about winning races. This program is about communicating the dire needs and the actions that we need to take to help preserve the planet that we live in.
Hazel, when it comes to the electric story of this championship, obviously people want to try and convert from, you know, diesel combustion engines across to electric cars. This is a off-road SUV. How important do you think this is for the electric movement?
I think in terms of should we all go out and buy an electric off-road SUV and would that solve climate change? Absolutely, unconditionally, no. That would be a disaster on its own right. So I see why a lot of people would go like, well, isn't there a kind of a conflict here? But, you know, you also don't, no one goes out and buys a race car. Like, that's not the purpose of it. But the point of showing an electric vehicle in a really rugged circumstance, electric vehicles getting damaged, getting rolled, getting chucked around, and having to survive that and be repaired and undergo this incredibly intense series where they're going to be in a desert. So overheating is going to be a problem in Alala. And then they're going to go to very cold climates. So you're going to have to try and keep the minimum temperatures high enough because batteries don't like getting cold. They actually almost hate it as much as getting hot. And the challenges and the dirt and everything, like, people think of electric vehicles as almost delicate, as sort of quite light, or not actually lightweight because batteries weigh a lot, but vehicles without lots of horsepower, without the ability to hoon up 130 slope. To show electric vehicles in this different light where it is very rough and tumble and where, you know, there's not very many mechanics who are able to come out with every team. It's incredibly limited on personnel. I was speaking to Ian Davis, the team manager for Veloce, a couple of weeks ago, and he said he had to get Jamie and Stefan high voltage certification because they may well have to repair their own car. So to see it in those contexts where it's demystified away from kind of like spooky Tesla factories and everything being shut away behind screens and the cars being almost distanced from, or people feeling like there's a big distance emotionally in an electric vehicle from what actually makes it go. this is a completely different thing. And I think it's probably going to get a lot of people really excited who have never bought into anything hybrid, have never bought into anything electric, and who you couldn't buy in, get that buy-in with for something like Formula E.
Roger, I'm appreciative that it's quite late at night where you are, and I don't want to take more of your time. So we're going to say go to bed. You've probably still got work to do, but just tell us from your point of view, when it comes to Extreme E, what's the biggest challenge you are going to have this weekend, or you think you're going to have this weekend?
I think it's just working out exactly how this is all going to work. I mean, in the conversations I've had with the other team members, I said, you know, the one word I think is going to spring to mind is patience. You know, we've got to figure this out together. It's a new championship. There's a few little growing pains that we're all dealing with. But we'll work it out. We'll get to the end. We're going to have a fantastic event this coming weekend. I think the location is going to be one of the most spectacular in motorsport. But, you know, we're going to have our challenges along the way, but we're just going to, everybody's going to be patient. I think one of the nice things that I've seen in the few months we've been involved with all the teams is the willingness of the teams to work together to find a good solution. We all want this to be successful, and we all want it to succeed, not just for ourselves, but for the community that is Extreme E. So I really hope that spirit carries forward through this weekend and then for the rest of the championship. So that for me is, you know, the key thing that we're going to have to work on and stay focused on, and everything else will figure itself out.
I love it. Roger, good night. Thank you so much. And we wish you the very best of luck this weekend.
All right. Thank you. Good night, everybody. And thanks for listening to us.
Bye-bye. Hi, Roger.
Thanks, Roger. Sleep well.
Bye. There are 18 drivers on that St. Helena ship now who are able to update their Instagram stories and able to post that tweet because Roger isn't taking up all the bandwidth on the Wi-Fi.
Oh, bless him. Lovely, Roger. Thank you, Matt, for making that possible as well. Matt, very difficult, obviously challenging when you've got a team principal from a team. And I made you do the worst thing possible of all of you having to say which teams you thought were going to do well. But I think the quality of teams that they actually have, the quality of drivers, the locations, that's why people are genuinely excited about this. It's why it's being broadcast across the world to millions of people, because, Matt, it's something that I think people at home can really latch onto and be excited about.
Yeah, the way I put it is, I think the best thing that happened to Formula E in the first race was a massive, massive crash. Fortunately, all the drivers were okay, but it sort of went viral on Twitter. And Extreme E's equivalent, I think the best outcome is that, you know, you have Lewis Hamilton or Jenson Button or Nico Rosberg's team winning because their household's name, or you have someone like Sarazen. You know, we haven't even spoken about Sebastian Loeb or Matthias Ekström. So far,
or which, Carlos Sainz.
Exactly.
I was literally thinking this. I was like, somewhere in that discussion, we somehow haven't mentioned either of the WRC champions.
Yeah. And there's that. That's a massive pull because, you know, on the one hand, you do have the environmental element, which is a huge part. It's what the championship is based around. But the headlines that will come, you know, as a journalist, one, you know, I'm very fortunate. I'm now working with some of the drivers I've grown up following and sort of hero worshiping, and two, it offers, you know, a great headline, a great narrative, for want of a less sort of cliche word, when you have some proper A-list superstars in motorsport. And I think that's, you know, maybe David can weigh on in this, what he wants out of the championship is, as a producer, is you want that, because surely that draws in the biggest audience if you've got a massive name doing well.
If you'd asked Alejandro, okay, so we're going to get three former F1 world champions, two former WRC world champions, three world rallycross world champions, one of them who's the current one, plus all these other drivers, you know, who've had all this varied experience. These are the names you're going to have for the inaugural season. I think he would have ripped our arms off. I think, you know, it's such a strong field, a really intriguing field. And I think what I love is this idea that on the St. Helena, there is a mixture of that sizing up and kind of working each other out. But as you heard that, I just think, you know, Roger put it absolutely perfectly. It is this camaraderie, and that they will work together. Yes, they are competing. And, you know, when you get on that starting grid and, you know, that they race for the first time or they race in the final, yeah, sure, they'll all want to win. But I think that there is this kind of very unique flavor to this, which makes it really intriguing. I want to see who the characters are. You know, I want to see, you know, what Christine Jizzi is like, because she's, you know, a bit of a live wire, a bit of a crazy one. How is that going to work with Ollie, who's just a little bit more of a kind of, not dour, but down to earth Bristolian, you know? And you want to kind of find those characters. So from a TV point of view, there's the storytelling element. And also it's this is set up for TV. You know, the way that they're going to film it, the way that it's going to really jump off the screen, you know, with the same kind of production value that we're used to with Formula E, because obviously it's the same in-house, you know, production team with Aurora. And I think it will just be spectacular. And that in itself will capture imaginations. You know, I think just on a kind of visual level, I think it will look mega. And then you add in the things that Hayes was talking about, the electrification side of it. People kind of asking themselves the question, right, how do I feel about this now? You know, do I want to investigate? Or I might just search online on Autocar and go, oh, how much does this electric vehicle cost? Or whatever. Yeah, people will just start asking themselves the question. And that's the point of this thing. That's the point of this thing. You know, you're not going to make a message land unless you get people to question what they're doing and how they can change their attitudes, their mindsets, their behaviours to be something that's a little bit more sustainable for the planet. So, yeah, I mean, I've kind of wandered off the kind of question you asked me there, Matt. But I think, you know, a combination of those things, because I think we want that to land with our audience on Sky Sports. And I'm sure it's the same with the other broadcasters too, because that's how things ultimately change.
Yeah, I think I've had a little look at the course, which I shouldn't probably admit to because it's all top secret. But
so
I am
long
doing
as you
the
don't
commentary.
Flash it up on
yeah. No flashing here, Hazel.
Can you
we know the
share
rule.
Screen? Do you want me to enable share screen?
We always knew there was going to be a cliff, a drop-off that the drivers would have to deal with. That takes some serious cojones. So I'm thinking it is a very different skill set to circuit racing. You know, you put Jamie Chadwick, you put Jenson Button. Jenson Button's had a little bit of experience off-roading, but, you know, you put these drivers who are used to pristine tracks and controlled environments into these places, and they're not going to get a huge amount of time to test. They don't know the course as we speak. And Matt, the challenging thing will be them getting their heads around this as quickly as they can. And as you say, learning from each other, but they're not in the car together at the same time. So it's a huge amount to take in and process.
Absolutely. Take Rosberg's team, for example. A lot of them have come from the DTM. So they've never gone home at the end of a day with sand around their ankles, with mud up to their waist. You know, they've, as we've seen in some videos, they've never, you know, there's no German circuits where there's snakes coming out or scorpions coming out. It's a completely new environment for them to learn, to adapt with, you know, to manage the battery temperatures. And same for the drivers as well, that they're coming into this, you know, completely different conditions. There's not going to be a place, there's not, you know, their debrief room where, you know, they've got their you know, Game Boy or whatever. I don't know what the drivers do, but it's not air conditioned. It's going to be in a tent in the middle of the desert, and they're going to have to work around that. And you know, some of these drivers, you know, look at the way Loeb revolutionized the style of rally driving by being so clean and precise, but he's not going to have his usual sort of bank of data to work off. It's you know, Jenson Button, who has spent preparation for every Grand Prix doing simulator lap after simulator lap. We're now 2 days out from a race and he doesn't know the course he's driving on. It's all about, you know, improvisation. That's going to be, you know, a real narrative, because it's all the drivers are having their backs at the walls. They've got to throw a few punches. It's going to be great to see who, to keep the analogy going, see who comes out fighting best.
Contact Sport, as we've already mentioned about Formula E having that big smash in the first round, Contact Sport is a big thing. And David, there probably will be contact with these cars. There's no messing around. They are going to go out and they're going to have to do a bit of door banging.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, unless you've been involved in a series like, say, touring cars, where you're used to running three abreast and, you know, a little bit of push and shove here, and it's just normal part of the racing, you know, it's going to be, yeah, yet another thing to discover. I think also, I mean, to Matt's point about the preparation, remember that these cars, as soon as you finish this race, where are they? Back on the St. Helena and off to the next venue. You don't get the luxury of, you know, looking at the car, taking it, you know, back to the factory, running a bunch of tests on it. You know, it's out of your hands again. So there is this super adaptation. I think, and it will be really interesting to those that haven't had that kind of experience in their careers before, whether they get their elbows dirty, whether they choose to stay out of trouble, how aggressive they're going to choose to be, what sort of strategy they'll employ. And this again comes back to the makeup of the teams. And I can imagine that, you know, a team where you've got a mixture of those skills, say Molly Taylor, Johan Kristoffersen at Rosberg, compared to a team where you don't have, you have people who are maybe a little bit further apart, like Jamie and Stefan, that line of communication is so important. But already I know that they've been working at it, and Jamie spent some time out with Stefan and just getting used to a few things. So, you know, whatever they can take from the little experience they've had up until now, they'll be clinging on to that and then just throw it away as they get to know the desert scene and see how it all goes there.
Okay, I'm going to wrap things up just by asking each of you, I think, what you're most excited about. Because a new series, which people don't know anything about, they're going to join the coverage on Saturday or Sunday and all of a sudden have this huge sort of assault on their senses, because it's going to be visually spectacular. It's going to be, you know, it's going to pull on your emotions. It's going to give you diversity. It's going to give you great racing, hopefully. So let's start, Matt. What are you most excited about when it comes to Extreme E?
It's a total cop-out, but it's the race. Because for all of the reasons you mentioned, you know, beautiful scenery, these top-class drivers, but also things that we haven't spoken about, you know, when cars are following behind each other, there's going to be a cloud of dust. There's going to be rocks that are pelted up. It's going to, you know, I bet we'll see paintwork stripped off these cars. And, you know, we're going to have to see drivers thinking on their feet, pulling out of that. How they, you know, whether they go for the gap and choose to run side by side, or they back off. There's so much we don't know. And I think, you know, Roger said the one thing, the word being used is patience. It's unpredictability. We don't really know your pecking order. We don't know how the races are going to turn out. We don't know how the drivers are going to react, quite literally, in the heat of the moment. And, you know, the journalist in me wants a really easy race to write about, but the fan in me wants something mega unpredictable. And I really think that's what we're going to get this weekend.
The journalist in you wants an easy story. Matt, absolutely. I banish you. No, I don't really banish you.
He just wants to get back on the whiskies on the St. Helena, doesn't he? That's what that's all about.
Should have asked you, Matt, what's in your cup? What are you drinking?
I am drinking still water.
Nonsense. I'm Saudi Arabia's finest dram, isn't it? That's what it is. Is it single malt?
Absolutely not.
I've been made it out there.
I've been in the sun for more than 10 minutes today, so heat stroke's a possibility. So I'm on the still water.
Love that. Hazel, what are you most excited about?
I'm going to say something completely nerdy and over-specific compared to Matt, which is that the cars that are going to be going out and racing are using materials that no other race cars have really used before. So I can't remember if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm just going to say it because I'm pretty sure it's going to go out in the race.
I know you're not allowed to say it, but I'm not saying it, so you are, so you can probably get away with
it.
Well,
someone just goddamn say it, please.
So the bodywork is made of hemp. Some of the cars definitely have already announced. I know Veloce have already said they're using this, so I think it's probably okay. But yeah, there's this material made by a company called B-Comp, which is in place of carbon fibre, because obviously we don't want to be using loads of carbon. It's a, you know, environmental series. There's stuff that's literally just made out of flax fibers. That it's a very clever thing that they developed. They actually wanted to make skis out of it, but then they realized it had other applications. And like seeing that and seeing that withstand motorsport conditions, very rough motorsport conditions, and also the teams having to work with not just a new series and a new car, but like they don't know how it's going to thermally react, like how much heat it absorbs and like how that will reflect on the car, how that will reflect even on the tyres, which themselves are made out of dandelions. They're made out of this stuff called Taraxa gum, which I just had to Google, but that is the right word, which is, it's a sort of rubber-like compound which you make out of the gooey stuff in the middle of a dandelion stalk, basically. That's an oversimplification, but like it's.
But yeah. I like it. It's a good that simplification. Stuff.
The fact that we're seeing, I mean, it is a bit like flower power is a stupid thing to say about it, but it's really interesting to see innovation on that level. Like, it's not that everyone's got the same car, so there's nothing going on. It's this car is actually like a really interesting thing.
They've both made really, really good points, Matt and Hazel, and you know, talking about the entertainment factor, which is important. This needs to entertain. You know, that's how you capture people's imagination. You get them talking about it and sharing it with each other. Electrification, which Hazel talked about before. And of course, you know, Extreme E is built on these pillars of E, isn't it? And equality and environment. But I'm going to have a different E, which is evolution. I'm really interested in how the series will evolve, what the stories will be that evolve, and whether there's someone who gets an early advantage, but then someone else who just learns quicker, smarter, savvier, and turns it around. But also, I really want to see how these characters evolve, how these personalities evolve. You know, who is it that we haven't even talked about? You know, no one's mentioned Chris Gutierrez, who's in the same, you know, team as Sebastian Loeb for X44, or I don't know. There's so many there that we barely mentioned. I was like, thinking, who's this hidden star? Who's the person that's going to really come out and impress us all, but not just as a driver, but as an individual who's really taking what this series stands for, you know, really is take the bull by the horns and have an adventure and an evolution themselves. Because I think a lot of them have sort of openly said, oh, I wasn't up to speed on the dangers of climate change or all these sorts of other elements, the learnings they've been given today on the St. Helena, the different, you know, people and scientists they're talking to. Who is going to, you know, really go through an evolution personally over the course of the next 8 to 9 months? I think that'll be absolutely fascinating to find out.
Jenny, you're hosting this, but you're an Extreme E co-commentator, so I feel like you should say what you're most excited about.
Yeah, Jen.
There's so much. That's the thing I love about this series, and that's what intrigued me. Obviously, I'm not a commentator. I haven't really done lead commentary ever. So this is going to be a personal challenge for me to undertake. And I think that's the same for everybody that's got involved in the championship, from Alejandro at the top all the way down to people like Roger, to, you know, the journalists involved, to everybody. It's kind of challenging ourselves about what we're comfortable with, what we're not comfortable with, what we need to try and change ourselves. You know, Extreme E has been very thoughtful about putting out messages about, okay, how can you change your world to be just that little bit more environmentally friendly, to try and tackle this climate disaster that we're heading into kind of whilst we're looking at our navels. So there's a lot to be really excited about going into this. And the locations that they've chosen are utterly fascinating. And, you know, I've always been a little bit of an environmentalist. So for me, being able to really explore that and find out, okay, well, you know, what are we really facing, what are the challenges, and having the leading scientific minds to tell us that and help us explain that as a story is just, you know, it's a revelation. So I'm really excited about it. Everything, really, as you say, relationships, cars, tech, EV, environment, you name it, bring it on.
It's just crept up on us, though. I felt like, you know, we've been talking about it for a while, but it feels like in the last 2 weeks, it's just gone whoomph. Suddenly it's here, and the St. Helena's arrived, and then the drivers are getting there, and they've been on the boat. It's just like, my God, this is really happening. Does anyone else get that sense?
Yeah, completely. They had 3 test races all cancelled because of COVID. Like, there's, yeah, you know, the preparation has been so limited. And as a result of that, the noise has been limited to a certain extent in the build up. So it's, you know, going from 0 to 100,
yeah,
in straight off the line, and that's what I'm so excited about. But we've all named different assets to the championship we're excited about, so we've all earned our Extreme E paycheck.
I could have just said I'm excited about being broadcast on the most number of channels simultaneously without it being a royal wedding ever, but things a bit big-headed personally. David, probably you're the best person to tell us where we can watch it, where people can watch it. I'll be watching it in a commentary booth.
I don't know about the other broadcasts. I can't sadly tell you about them, but yes, Sky on Saturday and Sunday. I think it's believed that it's a 7 a.m. start, British time, obviously a couple of hours behind Saudi Arabia, or every single qualifying session live. So that's, you know, rounds and races and semi-final, crazy race, final, all the whole shebang, and then supported with lots of great shoulder programming and content on Sky Sports digital and social media channels as well, and hopefully a bit of Sky Sports news. But actually, all being well, and, you know, Wi-Fi etc. being compliant and behaving itself, I'm hoping to speak to Katie Munnings in between sessions on Saturday morning, because I'm on air on Sky Sports News, and Andretti have been great, so hopefully we'll be able to get like that immediate reaction in between, and she's got her first taste of it, which I think will be, you know, really fascinating to hear. So yeah, hopefully we'll do the series justice on Sky Sports for you guys.
Good stuff. There's plenty of other ways to watch it. You can go onto the Extreme E website if you want to find out where you are in your country. You can guarantee it'll be broadcast. You might hear my voice, might be somebody else's, but it'll be great whatever happens. Hazel, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Are you going to be writing up Extreme E anywhere in the world for people?
I'm doing the live blog for The Independent, and I will be doing coverage on The Drive and Inside Electric.
Awesome. And Matt, obviously you're auto sporting it.
Yeah, plenty of news stories going up on autosport.com, podcast probably, and then I think I've got 6 lovely pages in the magazine to fill, which is out on Thursday. So plug done.
Done. Everybody's plugged. So we will unplug and recharge and join you for the weekend when we'll be live with all the action from Extreme E. To Matt, to David, to Hazel, thank you so much for your time, to Roger as well. Good luck to all the teams, and thank you for listening and watching to Fast Talk as well. See you next time. Bye, everybody.